Well, the world is a dumpster fire. Nothing here makes sense. And you vacillate in crippling fear, constant self-defense. And nothing's right and nothing's good, and you're paralyzed with grief. Don't kill yourself, just have a cup of coffee.
Welcome, everybody, to the first episode of Coffee Over Suicide, a dramedy podcast choosing life over death one cup of coffee at a time. I'm your host, Chris Parker Howard, and this is our space. This is our comfortable place. We can talk about all this stuff without worrying what anybody thinks about it. It's not a therapy session. Think about it more like a group therapy session where you sneak off to talk to the guy at the donut table and you get a cup of coffee and have a conversation. It's a lot more like that. I'm not any sort of licensed therapist of any kind. I'm just another guy at the group session trying to figure shit out just like everybody else. So, welcome. Glad to have you. Let's have a conversation. Now today we're going to be talking to Jody Pearson Kraska. She is a friend of mine that I've known for quite a long time, and we've gone through some stuff together. It's pretty interesting, the conversation we have, just as it is pretty long. We talked about a lot of things. We talked about medications. We talked about behavior patterns. We talked about not necessarily being aware of a shift in your own reality versus the reality of the people around you. And parenting when you're a person with mental illness. So it's a really good conversation, really, really dense. There's a lot to take in, so maybe take this one in a couple of pieces if you have to, but it's pretty damn excellent. You know, when I first said I was going to do this, she was the very first person to respond saying that she'd be willing to go on mic and talk about this kind of stuff publicly. And so I really can't thank her enough. We really got into a lot of stuff. And all of the episodes after this have really been all over the place as far as the conversations and the topics. And sometimes it gets a little dark. And sometimes it's just, you know, excitedly going through some mania with someone for a minute. So, yeah, you're really going to get a whole range of things in all of this. But here I am talking like a crazy person. I've had a lot of coffee this morning, and I have a lot of coffee right now. And I think this is the best place to jump in. I'm glad you're here. Grab a cup of coffee, grab a donut, and let's talk to Jody Pearson Kraska. Well, let's go ahead and start right here. When did you first notice a manifestation that something was off?
I was probably 30 years old.
Wow.
And this is something that I can go back and look back on and say, I can see it in old movies. I can see it in pictures. I can hear it from stories that my family has told me that this came out probably from the time I was 11 or 12, I've always felt like an outsider.
Yeah.
When I go back and I look and I see all the different relationships that I had, friendships that I had once we moved here, how short they were and how difficult they were, it boggles my mind to think, how did a teacher not see it? How did my doctor not see it? How did my parents not see it?
Well, I think that there's a part of that is a specific thing almost to that area. You know, there are geographic pockets where people just have sort of a way of being around certain subjects. It's not even a matter of people disregarding that something strange is happening. It's that there's this strange social psychosis where everybody is just a little bit messed up and people don't really accept it as a problem. They think that's just how things are. Why talk about it?
Right. I mean, it's easier to go and tell somebody that you have diabetes, but it's not as acceptable to go up and tell somebody I was diagnosed with depression and PTSD.
Yeah.
Because they're like, oh, what's wrong with you with cancer or diabetes? They're like, okay, well, we'll help you with your sugar control and, you know, make sure we don't have all these sweet snacks about you with cancer. It's what can we do? How can we make you feel better with mental illness? They're like, okay, well, it was nice talking to you.
People treat people with mental illness the same way they would treat somebody who's in hospice care. It's that same kind of thing. It's like, I know that there's something with you that's not going to get better, and I don't know what to do with it, and it's alien from me.
Right.
And so a lot of people get afraid of that, and they tend to just back off because they don't know what to do with it. They don't know what's acceptable, you know, how it is to talk to you. They don't know if you're going to be triggered by something because they don't understand that it takes on a lot of forms. It's like people think they understand depression because they understand sadness. It's that same kind of thing.
But it's not just feeling sad.
Yeah.
It's not just like a grief after the loss of somebody, because some days it's not even having the energy or the strength to get out of bed. It's not
yeah.
Being able to find the energy. In your head, you can know, oh my gosh, I haven't showered for 4 days. I need to get in the shower. But the whole thought process of getting up out of bed, getting towels, going to the bathroom, turning on the water, standing in the shower, actually bathing yourself. No, I'm done.
Yeah.
I can't do it. It's too exhausting. I just would rather lay in bed and do nothing.
Well, and there's something that happens like in your head. It's literally a hijack of your reality.
Right.
That's exactly what it is. It's that thing where... you know, you're seeing the sky as purple all of a sudden, and you're the only one that sees it.
Exactly.
And it can be difficult to try and communicate that with other people, because if they can't put that into their own experience, they might have a difficulty with it. There's a real problem developing with empathy among a lot of people, and I'm not sure exactly where it's coming from, but it does appear to be a thing that is getting worse in a lot of areas. Do you think it might have anything to do with our tendency to isolate amongst ourselves?
Right.
I mean, it's becoming a lot easier and easier to isolate yourself with, you know, an echo chamber of like-minded people.
It's also easy to isolate yourself away from people with the advances of technology.
Yeah, completely.
I mean, I don't ever have to leave my house anymore, because I'm both an extrovert and an introvert. The bipolar mania part of me, very open, very happy, very manic, very... You know, before I was being treated, I can go back now and see... That was a manic episode. How did nobody notice that I was, talking really fast or having all these wild, crazy ideas? How did nobody say, slow your roll?
Right. Well, I mean, they probably did, just not to you.
Right. But, you know, when you can understand it, like you said, it hijacks your mind. When you understand it, when you're laying in bed and you're say, day four and I haven't showered, you can get yourself, when you understand it, to reason, okay, this is just the depression talking.
Yeah.
It's my choice to let the depression win or to let me win. So as much as I hate it, I'm going to get up and shower. And it's just those little steps to help bring you back out of it. You can tell, especially once you get medicated, you can tell when you're starting to go up or when you're starting to go down. And instead of ignoring it, that's when you need to step in and ask for help or tell somebody, you know, talk to I've talked to my doctor before and I've told her, this is not working at this level. I'm starting to feel these symptoms and they're not just going away. Anything that I can try to do. And then you increase the medication or try something new. Understanding what you have, same as diabetes, understanding what you have, getting your medications and taking the right medications at the right time to get everything under control, like diabetes, you can live what people consider a normal life.
Yeah.
When you come off the medication, when your medication doesn't start working, when you have times of stress, birth, marriage, death, anything, moving, starting school, finishing school, kids moving in and out, anything that causes higher stress, will cause a bipolar person more anxiety, more depression, more chance for going manic or the other way. And so those times are really times where, you know, as a bipolar, you need to reach out and say, I might need a little help. The kicker to this is being able to have those people around you that you can say, I'm going to need help during this.
Right.
Or I need to leave this situation right now. I can't handle this because I'm getting anxiety. Or them being able to even notice that you're starting to, you know, something's a little off, and then pulling you aside or taking you away from the situation. A lot of people don't have people that can do that, because once people start getting close enough and you feel like you're able to share that with them, a lot of people start backing away again.
Yeah. So you're currently on medication now.
Correct.
How many different varieties did it take before you found the Goldilocks pudding?
Probably about 4 or 5 different medications.
Yeah.
Before the bipolar part started getting under control, and then we had to add in a different medication because it wasn't enough to combat the anxiety.
Yeah.
Or things when PTSD and that fight or flight kicks in.
Yeah.
For me, it was always the anger, the aggression, the fight would always. I never had the thought to run. It was always, I'm going to take something on right now. Being put on that other med and learning how to control that a little bit more. And I like that word control a lot, because a lot of people think bipolar, anxiety, depression, PTSD, anything like that controls you. But you're actually the one in control.
Yeah.
You get to determine, do I let this take a hold of me and go, same as you would with diabetes, throw caution to the wind, eat whatever I want, do whatever I want? Or do I, you know, do this? It's what's best for me. I went on vacation because not for my family, not for my parents, my kids, nobody. I did it for me.
Right.
Because I didn't like that feeling of being out of control. Being upset and sitting on the floor crying and not knowing why, being angry and standing there shaking, clenched jaw and fists, being red and drenched in sweat and not understanding why am I so angry and why can't I stop being angry.
Right. And that's the other thing too, that feeling that you get when the chemicals that are being delivered into your brain are telling you that you're feeling one way. Now, even if they're not being triggered by something that is a reality, those emotions are still real emotions, even if they're not coming from a real place.
Correct.
So you still have to live through that. And that's the other thing that's scary about it.
But the bipolar person seems to see things in more abstract and more extremes.
Mm-hmm.
If we're sitting and watching a movie, my daughter's in World War II classes, so we're sitting there watching a movie about the Holocaust. Somebody next to me might just be sitting there, wow, this is very informative, where I'm sitting there, oh my goodness, the tragedy these people saw, and oh, how sad this is for me, how depressed this is. And then you get angry because who would ever do this to another human being?
Right.
The other person next to you was, what is your problem? Why is this getting so under your skin? Oh, yeah. Over-emotional. Tone it back down, you know? Just a second. Forgot my med this morning, whatever it was. But even still, I mean, you know, something like two different people can see two different things. Bipolar sees a lot more colors, so to speak, than someone else does.
Well, the other thing that I find sometimes is that you can be fully aware of your symptoms and what they look like, how they're manifesting, you know, and just know, well, I guess I'm going to have to ride this out today. Like here it is. But as far as your medicine is concerned, is it doing a pretty good job of keeping the perspective? Because my experience with meds is I was on meds from, I think probably, I'm going to say, you know, 19, 1994 all the way to maybe 2004. And then I had a brief period in 2011 where I went back on something for a little while, and I haven't used him since for various reasons. But I will say that my experience with it is that sometimes I know that they can make things worse, and I think that it can make it worse, especially if you're an obsessive thought person. It can make it worse if you notice you feel different.
Yes.
Just the very act of feeling different. Is this the medicine doing something to me?
I have had that almost like you're hyper-focused on what the side effects may be, and you're constantly scanning yourself internally, figuring out if you have these symptoms or not. And I actually didn't start doing that until after, I think it was the second medication they put me on.
Right.
And I really did start getting sick, and it wasn't being very effective. I was extremely angry all the time, very, very angry, very vile person. And they started checking blood levels, and oh, we've got to take her off of that because the liver enzymes, which are supposed to be nice single digit or double digit numbers, low double digit numbers, say 40s, you know, 30s, mine were 300s. 186.
Wow.
So yeah, basically the medication damaged my liver, and I had to be put on something else. And at that point was when I started going through, okay, what are the side effects? What could go wrong with this one? That's when I started really getting involved in, this is my body, this is my life. I have to know what I'm taking and how, what if the good is going to outweigh the bad. And there are medications I still won't put let my doctor put me on or to try.
Yeah.
Because I tell her, looking at the side effects, I don't think it's worth it. I will just keep trying to meditate and trying to just stay centered a little bit more. And when people really tick me off, I'll just kind of try to be a duck and let it roll. But there are times I'm not a duck at all.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're still a human being. I mean, the medication can act as kind of a buffer between you and the monster that's taken over your body. That is the depression. That's really all it's designed for. The thing that, like, I remember with the first time that I went to therapy and got medicated, I was expecting that it was just going to fix everything. Like, okay, now I'm on the right pills, and so, you know, I'm gonna be less of an asshole now. But that was not the case at all, because you still got to do the work.
Chemicals don't get balanced, and all of a sudden you're, you know, perfect, merry little sunshine. You know, your chemicals get balanced, and you can still be a bitch. You have to learn how to stop being what bipolar told you, or like for me, in my case, I had to stop being what bipolar told me was okay to be for 10, 15 years.
Right.
And start being what I know humans are supposed to be.
Right. So you had lived an entire lifetime up to that point thinking this is just how things are. But what was it that tipped the scale for you?
I can go back and I can look and I can pinpoint the day that I actually said, well, if this is how everyone's going to be, well, then screw it. They want a show, I'm going to give them a show. So I started at home, and I was drinking and took a bunch of pills. And then I went down and met up with my friends, and I was still drinking and taking a bunch of pills. And everybody thought we were just partying, having a grand old time. And then I pass out. Next thing I know, I'm in the ER and people are working on me because I had overdosed.
Yeah.
I literally tried to kill myself because at that time I was pissed off with my then boyfriend because he had hurt me for what I had considered was the last time. I'm going to break up with him, and I'm going to show him that there's no way this time he's ever getting back with me. I'm going to kill myself. Because that's what the bipolar
brain is. Because that'll show him.
That'll show him, right? oh, that'll really get him. He'll have to live with that for the rest of his life.
Right.
But that's how skewed your mind can be thinking, because that wasn't definitely wasn't the way to go. It wasn't rational thinking at all.
No.
But after that, that's what I thought. I woke up thinking, well, that was about the most irrational thing I've ever done in my life. What the hell?
Yeah.
And I was actually traumatized myself by it, thinking I almost died. You know, and this guy wasn't worth dying over for sure. I can tell you that. Nobody is.
Nobody is.
Nobody is. And at my age now, I look back and think, I really wish I would have had somebody I could have called and talked to. I really wish I would have had somebody who would have seen that spiral down and said, you know, hey, let me come hang out with you today. You know, yeah. I just don't feel like something's right with you.
Yeah.
Because, you know, because it didn't have to happen, but in a way I'm glad it did, because that set forth the catalyst of, I can't let this happen. I just can't.
Yeah.
But it still took me about another 5-6 years after that to actually get into a doctor and be able to fully talk to them about it and see a therapist and get medications and get treated. Mm-hmm. But then once I did, I mean, I can look back now and say I hated it every step of the way. I hated every person I had to deal with, because they kept saying that in my head, they're going to fix me. And yeah. I didn't feel I was broken. I didn't feel I needed to be fixed. But again, that's the angry bipolar part saying, you know, go away. Nothing wrong with me. Leave me alone.
Well, right. There's that language that comes out, you know, like you said, right. the idea of broken. You know, you don't want to see yourself as broken, because you see yourself right. as a person who wants to be a person.
Right.
And that language that we use, where, you know, something is broken, something doesn't work right, something is impaired. It's all carrying these connotations with it that are ultimately pretty negative. And so it's no wonder people don't want to say anything about it when something comes up and they realize I'm outside the spectrum of what everybody is expecting.
Right. And the reason why I you know, reference the example of diabetes so much is because that's exactly what one of them told me.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, if we were sitting here having a conversation because your sugar is out of balance and you have diabetes, this would be so much more relaxed, and, you know, the insurance wouldn't have any issues with things and so on and so forth. But when it becomes some mental illness, there's this stigma about it that nobody wants to talk about it. Nobody wants to deal with it. Hush, hush, go away. I don't know if it has to do with the way they dealt with things in the 40s, the 50s, and shock therapy and, you know, lobotomies and all of that. But, they don't need to do that now, except for in the most extreme cases.
Sure.
Because there are a lot of things that can help. And the biggest thing for people is talking, whether it's to a therapist or to a friend or family member, just helping them understand what your brain is thinking, even to the point where you tell them, okay, just so I understand what you just said. Like you said, you can tell me the sky is blue, and I'll look at you and say, okay, just so I understand, you're saying this sky is blue. It's not a shade of purple. It's not chartreuse. It's not lilac. You are saying it's blue. Is that the norm, that this is blue? Because for me, I want to find out now, is this the norm? Is this something that I really need to say, okay, maybe you need your eyes checked. Maybe you're colorblind, child.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are a lot of things now that I ask people, is this the norm? Is this how people act here? Is this what people do here? Is this how this works? You know, because I'm still, it's sad to be my age and still learning, but I'm still learning every day, because the more the medical people learn, the more the pharmaceutical companies learn, the more I learn. the more the therapist learns, the more I learn.
Well, and you can only behave as well as the information you have. And you know, the idea of trying to conform yourself can be daunting when you're in a state where you feel like the reality is telling you something else.
Right. And there are still times where, you know, wires seem to be crossed and I'm not comprehending something as well as somebody would like me to, or I'm not able to get out, you know, or say to them what I need to.
Yeah.
Because in my head, it's one way, but when I say it, I've always been told since I was little that I was born without a filter. I don't think until after I've said something.
Right.
You know, one of the examples would be like, wow, is that your goal dress that you're trying on? No, I was going to wear this on my date. Is it you saying this makes me look fat? No, you're fat. You look fat. Oh, wait, I'm not supposed to say that kind of stuff, am I?
Yeah.
Oh, crap. No, you look really good. Just suck in your belly a little. Oh, crap. I can't say that either.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I think my mom had some of that. I think.
Yeah. I'm a very open, honest, kind of tell you how it is person.
Yeah.
But in the same respect, I can also be very shy and guarded about something too.
Right.
And it just, it really depends on what day it is. you know, the mood levels, whole nine yards. I mean, but it's really good when you're able to recognize your good days from your bad days.
Yeah.
And when you start keeping track a little bit and you know that your good days outweigh your bad days. And then to remind yourself too, that everybody has good days and bad days. Everybody has stressful days at work or at school or with their family. And just because you have bipolar or anxiety or depression doesn't mean that you're incapable of handling it. It just means that you need to try a little bit harder than other people.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it taking responsibility for your own shit.
Right.
You know, it might not be fair that you've been right. diagnosed with this thing. It might not be fair that it's, you know, you're constantly in a state of being tricked by your own body, but it is the reality. And after a certain point, you have to recognize that that is the reality for you, even if it isn't right. the reality for other people.
That was really difficult to accept. Because yeah. you go through that. Why me? You know, yeah. why my brain? Why do I have to be different? Why do I have to be out of control? But much like anything that you don't like, I mean, a cancer person and my dad went through the same thing. Why me? I'm a good guy. What have I done?
Yeah.
You know, why do I deserve this? And then after a while, he just, bless his heart, he just rolled with everything. And he was a big inspiration to me too, as far as really getting more of a handle on it than I had, especially in the last 5 years here. He passed away 3 years ago, and we found out 2 years prior that he was sick.
Mm-hmm.
And just watching him be such a champion through everything that he had to go through and what he was feeling. And okay, well, my bipolar doesn't cause me physical pain per se, but
it can.
But he is going through something equally as difficult, and I don't see him walking around being a big ass baby about it.
Yeah.
And he knew his was going to take his life. Mine could take my life if I wanted it to.
Yeah.
You know, get depressed enough, you could try suicide again, or just give up and say, working to be society's quote unquote normal is too much work.
Yeah.
So I give up. I'm done. Forget it. But not once did I see my dad with terminal cancer give up. So how can I give up? He never raised me to give up. He never raised me to quit on anything. And the worst thing that I could ever do would be to quit on myself.
Yeah.
You know, and I have kids. So, you know, I want to make sure that kind of like an alcoholic, I've gone back and done sort of like a 12-step program in a way where I've gone through and I've tried to make amends to people and say, look, I can't apologize enough for my behavior or what I said to you or how angry I was with you or the way I treated you. I just can't, and I can't take it back.
Yeah.
And I can't, explain it all away just by saying I was bipolar. I can say I was untreated and I didn't know at the point what I was doing. I was out of control. And for that, I apologize, you know?
So how are you trusting your emotions now? Like when you feel something, are you suspicious?
if something seems a little too Hollywood, then I will ask for validation or correction or something. Like, you know, is this really happening? Like, this is too good. This is really happening, right? And this is not something I'm making up my head. Like, no, this is good. I've had to have people clarify. This is what you said. Let me say it back to you the way I'm understanding it, so we're on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
And I've found also that I have to approach the way that I talk to people differently, because my normal way is to come up and say, well, that's not what she said. You said this.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do that, if I come at you and I say, well, Chris, that's not what you said. You said this. Automatically, you're like, whoa, where's the hostility? What's going on here? This is a minor issue.
Yeah.
But you said you would do the dishes, and there's still a glass sitting over there on the table. You did not do the dishes.
Right.
What I said was, I would do all the dishes. You could handle this. Oh, okay. So, I mean, you have to get it in your mind. Sometimes you have to clarify. Because there are times that I really can't, you know, I'll start getting upset and I'll know this is not something that I should be this upset about.
Right.
And so I'll tell people, I need to walk away. I need to walk away right now. I need a minute to calm down to be able to think clearer, because right now I'm not thinking clearly.
Yeah.
The problem with that is getting the people to let you walk away.
Yeah, sometimes people are, especially if they're trying to be helpful, they cannot want to leave the situation where it lays.
Right. Yeah. Even if you're telling them, you are not being helpful right now, you are making it worse, you're making me angry, please just leave me alone, they still don't want to walk away. And that's where, you know, I feel like I've done everything I can to try and control myself in the situation, and it almost feels like a dam breaking loose, because there's that one point where you just can't hold it in anymore because you're causing yourself too much physical stress.
Right.
So usually instances like that, I try to get, that's about the only time I'll try to flee anymore, is just because I'm trying to get away from a situation I know is going to get out of hand.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, positive things are usually what they seem to be. They usually really are positive. But negative things aren't necessarily always negative. Sometimes, like, constructive criticism is very difficult, because you don't hear the constructive portion of it. You just hear, you're not doing good.
Right.
You're doing a bad job at this. And then you get in that state of mind like, why should I even bother? I'm not doing anything good anyway. I can't do anything at all. I can't do anything right.
Yeah. Yeah. That tendency to, once again, like, oh, I'll show you a problem.
Right.
You think there's a problem with this. I know how to show you a problem.
Yeah. Well, if you thought I had an attitude before, well, just wait. I'll give you attitude.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, I
but I think that's a personality trait. That's a thing that, you know, after years and years of, mm-hmm. of nobody telling you not to do that, you know, it's a thing because I've got that same thing and it's something that I had to have someone tell me,
right? Look,
you're not doing yourself any favors here.
And that's usually what it takes is one ballsy person to come up and say, check yourself, dude.
Yeah.
You know, and they have to be stern and in your face like, hey, you need to stop what you're doing and take a look because this is not working.
Yeah.
And then you're like, I think almost in a way it's like one of those Buddhist things of bringing you back to that moment, that exact very moment that you're experiencing. Not anything from the past of what you've had, mm-hmm. not anything you're stressing about in the future, but would you take a look at what's happening at this very minute right now and just breathe, take a breath, and like that, any kind of anger, just let it go for a second and let's reexamine it. Why are we really angry? But unless you have that one person to come up and get in your face and do that, a lot of times people just let you go because, you know, this day and age, let's get out the cell phone. Maybe we can find something that'll go viral.
Yeah. Yeah. Now then you can be the internet's problem.
Exactly. Exactly.
Because that's what you want to be remembered for.
Exactly.
I can't imagine the people who are so, I can't even wrap my head around that. The people that aren't self-aware enough to know that there's going to be a document of just about everything you're doing anymore, especially right. The dumb shit.
Right. Oh, always. It can't be any of the really good stuff. It has to be the stupidest, dumbest shit you've ever done in your life.
Yeah, of course, that's what people are going to see. That's what you're going to be remembered for. It doesn't matter. So let me ask you this. Do you think that the fact that you've learned to grapple with this mental illness has made you better or worse at being able to recognize when someone is trying to talk to you? Do you think that had some kind of an impact on that one way or the other?
Oh yeah. There are just certain people that I won't talk to. I mean, I just,
because they trigger you or
because I know that they're just going to talk about stuff that's just going to trigger me and they're going to make me angry. So I you know, don't have much in common with them, whatever. I just would rather not talk to them. I have family members that, I mean, I'm a huge grudge holder, which I'm proud of, but not proud of in the same sense. I have family members that I won't talk to that, you know, honestly, I don't even really feel bad about it anymore. They did what they did and I didn't appreciate it at all. They never apologized for it. So to hell with them.
Yeah.
I mean, but I recently went back to work, which is a big thing for me because I don't do well with people.
Yeah.
My job doesn't have interactions with the public, so that's good. I just have interactions with other employees. And I've already had times at work where I've just had to stop and take a breath or, you know, walk away from people because they stress me out or they trigger me or they push a button. And yeah. I'm just like, you know what? I can't even. I would much rather just, for people that are going to be like that, I just much rather not talk with them.
Yeah.
Talking with people in general, after all these years of now going back and seeing what I'm not supposed to talk about or what isn't acceptable in normal conversations, it's sometimes I wonder, what am I allowed to talk about? What can I talk about? What doesn't cross the line?
Right.
Again, my daughter's studying World War II and the Holocaust, and we got a gingerbread house, and she asked if she could make like a little Auschwitz building, and I told her that was fine. No, just stay with me. So she did this. She's got the cute little Barbie doll face down in the frosting snow with little red beads of blood all around her.
Yeah.
We're at the store, and they have the Gingerbread Village on sale.
Yeah.
Now, apparently, any normal person would say, honey, let's just get this Gingerbread Village and then go home and talk to her about it. But my dumbass in the store tells my daughter, hey, look, we could get this Gingerbread House Village and make a whole entire set of Auschwitz Village, Auschwitz buildings. We could make everything. We could even put a pit there. And this lady is standing not 5 feet from us, just cracking up. My daughter, red in the face, Mom, you cannot say things like that in public. I'm standing there going, what's wrong with it? It's history. Why can't we say that we want to take this home and make Auschwitz? And the lady's still cracking up. My daughter's just like, Mom, you can't say that kind of stuff, please. Like, I'm sorry. Again, you know, there are some things that, you know.
So, sometimes perspective needs to be, you know, put back on track. I mean, even though you're getting things right, you're doing the work, you're doing the therapy, it can't change years and years of being a person who sees the world a certain way, where that matter of fact thought process of, well, you know, it coming from not meaning to, you know, do something that's going to offend anybody, but just coming from a place of purely, well, we're going to make this thing. Like, what would be wrong with that? What would be wrong with a gingerbread concentration camp? Like, you know, with dead Barbies in the front lawn. Like, what would be wrong with that? Because it's a representation. It's for school. It's for school.
Polly Pocket was a
We're talking about how it's wrong. It's like, why can't we eat it afterwards?
Right? So, I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Pretty tasty blood there in the frosting. That. But again, stuff you're not supposed to really be talking like. But
right.
I mean, just kind of things like that, that, like you said, after 18, 20 years of not being diagnosed,
yeah,
and then having another 5, 6, 7 years of trying to get therapy and get medication, that after, you got to figure, like you said, half your life is spent thinking that this is okay, this is normal.
Sure.
So now people come up and say, oh, honey, you can't talk like that. You're like, well, then what do I say? How do I say it? How do I interact with people where they're not going to think I'm, like you call me, a nut job?
I don't know how this is for you, but for me, when I first started thinking I was really going to start doing some hard work and figuring this stuff out, I did spend a lot of time in my own head, and I didn't look outside of myself because I was constantly, you know, on guard inside myself, and it made it more difficult to pay attention to the people and the situations around me.
I actually read a book called Bipolar for Dummies.
No, that's great, but of course there's a Bipolar for Dummies.
Exactly. There's a dummies book for everything.
Yeah.
But I mean, I had read a bunch of other things that the therapist had recommended, and it just was sitting on the shelf next to one of the books. And so I grabbed it, and kind of, I think it's because of the language that they use in there, the way that they explain things, almost like they're explaining them to kids.
Yeah.
Or foreigners, you know, this is our English language. Let's tell you the simplest terms, what bipolar is. And so that, and what those cute little exercises in there, I did that book, and some of it, I mean, you come to realization like, oh, wow, that isn't what it's supposed to be like. Wow, who knew?
Mm-hmm.
And some of the things that you learn about yourself, that, like, my bipolar is, if I go into the manic phase happy, then I'm giddy and I shop a lot and I overdo everything and I have these fancy ideas and, oh, we're going to get so much accomplished and I remodeled my whole entire house. But if I go into it and I'm grumpy, I'm really the biggest queen bee you have ever met in your life.
Well, it's a pendulum.
My bipolar can go either way with being giddy happy or pissy angry. And then the sadness comes or the depression comes. Because you know that as soon as one comes, the other's coming.
Yeah.
And they used to be, it used to be like riding Top Thrill Dragster. Because they would come on so fast, and then you'd be at this peak, and you'd feel so great and wonderful, and then you'd drop really fast, and then you didn't want to get out of bed. And so now this is probably like the most boring, like, log ride that people could ever take. Because there's little blips up and down, but they're definitely not as dramatic as they were. But
yeah.
I mean, my work isn't over by any means, but it has taken a lot of hard work to get here.
Yeah.
And I don't even really think that I've dipped my toe in the water of recovery.
Well, it is a process. That's
that's
the thing that was so hard for me to pick out was I thought once I discovered what all my symptoms were and where they were coming from and what the reality of my situation was, that I had solved the Rubik's Cube and now it was just going to be fine. And that is absolutely not the case. It's an ongoing process.
It's people who've been smoking or drinking 15, 20 years. It's not easy for them to quit. And if you liken that to a habit, the personality and the behavior have been habitual for 15, 20 years. You can't just stop a habit on a dime. It's going to take almost in a sense of rewiring your brain a little bit to say, for cigarette people, you know, this, we don't need this. We find other ways to keep our hands occupied, to get, you know, to wean off the nicotine, whatever, to become successful. And that's, as a mentally ill person, it has to be the same way. What can I do so that I can, you know, not have to be an addict to my own disorder?
Yeah.
So I'm not blaming everything. You know, I've got a bad day at work. Well, I'm bipolar, damn it. Just deal with it.
Yeah.
It's not something that you can blame.
Yeah.
You know, it's for blame. It's because it's still you. It's yours. Ultimately, it's your bipolar. It's your body. It's your mental illness. You have to take ownership of it and do something with it. Demi Lovato, ownership of her bipolar disorder. And she's, because of her celebrity status, able to do something about it.
Yes.
She's getting the word out about it. She's having little therapy sessions at her concerts.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's fantastic.
Yeah, that sounds great.
You need somebody to start bringing stuff like that out into the forefront to say, look, you know, I'm Demi Lovato and you love all my songs. You sing with them, you dance with them and everything. But guess what? I got bipolar.
Yeah.
Now what do you think of me? I'm still Demi Lovato. I still sing all your songs. You still dance to all my songs. But, you know, now what?
Well, and I think a lot of creative people do. And it's, there was a period where I wondered, you know, what is it about the arts that is so attractive to people with mental illness?
I think in a way it's just kind of a freedom that you have. You have a freedom to be able to have an outlet to unleash all that creativity, whether you see stuff in your head and you paint it or you write it down and make a song out of it. It's definitely is an outlet that you get this feeling when you're doing this, that you could actually be proud of something because it's you.
It's like one of the only places where you can have these crazy ideas and put them out there. Maybe not even crazy. That's probably not the right word to be using, but you can have these ideas and where you're thinking differently than the average person. And it's one of the only ways you can get those ideas across and actually be congratulated for them versus, are you okay?
I wonder sometimes though, if, follow me on this, that if sometimes society isn't better off with having mentally ill people around just because we're nonconformists. We don't sit inside the box and we don't think inside the box. We have that other creative portion of us saying, well, why can't we do it this way? Why wouldn't it work this way? Why can't we just try it?
Yeah, I do find that people tend to be more inquisitive if they've got something just a little outside of the norm going on with them.
And I, being a parent who has bipolar, it was a lot easier for me to see it come out, if it was going to come out, in my kids, in which it did of two of them.
Yeah.
That I know of for sure that have it. And my daughter, whereas at 15, I didn't have the intervention. I didn't have the medication. I didn't have the therapist. Yeah. I didn't have somebody looking out for me in that respect, probably because my parents and my doctor didn't know a whole lot about it back then.
Right.
You know, it's something that within the last 20 years has come out to be, you know, more openly spoken about. But I want to make sure that she doesn't have to go through the rest of her high school and her 20s when you're really formulating who you are.
Yeah.
Going through and being unmedicated and going through and having these crazy ups and downs.
Right.
And when I saw that in her, I did take her in, and she has her medication, and she's, the last couple months, she's been doing fantastic. She's, you know, a lot more even. And I think getting her in to see somebody now is going to be extremely beneficial for her for the rest of high school. And she does want to go to college and, you know, through the remainder of her 20s to help her have a more, you know, what society deems a more normal life.
Yeah.
You know, she's going to have more control over it at 18 than, you know, I had zero control at 18.
Yeah.
She's going to have that control at 18. So in that respect, I'm hoping that I'm able to help her and give her something more as a parent that I didn't have.
Well, and the thing that I'm trying to give to my kids as well is not so much the idea of trying to help them fit in with society. And I don't think that's what you were saying either, but
no,
the idea of giving them the tools to be able to navigate society. And to be able to navigate their own emotions,
right?
You know, like any other person would,
right?
And have an understanding of themselves, and because if they have an understanding of themselves and what they're doing, they're going to carry that wherever they're going, and society's going to do what society's going to do either way.
Exactly.
But if they've got that self awareness to understand where they're coming from or why other people might be acting the way they are. Then, you know, they're better equipped to deal with whatever nonsense happens.
Right.
Probably better equipped than we were.
Right. Well, and that's kind of what I was trying to get to was, I didn't mean, you know, I'm trying to smash a square peg into a round hole or anything. She is her own person regardless. And like,
well, don't worry. The world is going to do that for you. The world is going to try to do that anyway.
If we could get other parents who have mental illnesses to kind of do the same thing, hope that their child doesn't get it, but gets help for them when they do see things.
Yeah.
Or make sure even that it isn't anything, you know, more than her just being teenage and angsty. But there would be a lot less people slipping through the cracks and a lot more people getting help. And having those tools, like you said, having the tools to function, I might have been able to garner more of a filter if I would have had this, you know, back when I was in high
school. Who wants you with a filter?
After all these years, I don't think anybody would. I mean, it just wouldn't be me.
Well, and I think that everybody would agree that the person that you ended up being through everything that you had to go through to get you where you are right now is the best version of that person that any of us know.
And that's all that anybody can do is every day is to wake up and try to be the best possible you can be, mental illness or not.
Do you ever miss the mania, the high highs? You miss those sometimes?
Because they happened in my 20s, yeah, I do. I miss going out and hitting up two or three dance clubs and things and just dancing all night long with my friends and getting home at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning and you know, giggling and laughing and getting up at 5 o'clock at night the next night and doing it all over again with them going, seriously, again? I go, come on, it'll be fun.
I called my high school guidance counselor at 3 in the morning because I figured I had solved racism. And I wanted to go to the school paper and write this essay. And I went into school the next day and I remembered very little of it. And I just felt really, really exposed as, oh, yeah, that was that. I'm going to be honest. I think maybe I saw 5% of the racism at best. Like. So yeah, those high highs can come at a cost.
I do kind of miss that too, where you know, like almost feeling like you drink Robin Williams coffee or something. Like you've got all these manic ideas coming into your head, and everything's funny, and you know, you write it down. I got to tell people this later, and you're jotting down storylines or jotting down things for songs or. You know, you're painting something, you're like me, I'm redecorating the house or recreating this and shopping all over the place to do this. And it gets tiring. I mean, sometimes I miss the full creativity part of it, but just because I have medication doesn't mean I'm not creative anymore.
Right. Exactly. So many people are worried that the creativity is going away, but I say that if you're a creative person, you're just a creative person who happens to have the disorder. If you're giving the disorder all of the credit for your creativity, that's a real problem.
Right. Yeah, I'm not creative because I'm bipolar. I'm creative and bipolar.
Yes, that's precisely it.
I mean, it seems like people like Einstein still, I mean, he would have a good time.
Yeah.
You know? It's stuck in all these little problems and equations and things, and that's part of your mania, getting in there and microscopically getting to everything and solving everything. But other times, I mean, you can just be a jovial person that 90% of the time we're just normal. We're just like everyone else. It's just those random times where it's manic, high or depressive low. We just have a little bit more of a struggle to stay in that nice balance is all. Well, I think that's the only way that things are going to help people is to be able to be open and honest about it. Because if we keep hiding it and making it taboo, it's going to continue to be taboo.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's going to be like my, bless her heart, my grandma, back that any time that, you know, she was raised through the Depression. That's one of those things that talking about mental illness right now is like them. I'll do it exactly how she did. Talking about having diarrhea back then. It's just not something you spoke about.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You know, you don't talk about it. Mental illness, you don't talk about it. Being bipolar, depressed. PTSD is okay for people who have been in the service, but not for normal people. But that's not true. And PTSD doesn't have to just come from, a rape or a beating or a mugging or anything like that. I mean, there's many ways to get it, and it doesn't make it any less significant than a soldier's PTSD.
Well, no, of course not, because the thing is, it's you're taking a human being and you're breaking their ability to live in a sane reality where things happen because of cause and effect, and you put them now in a place where it's anything can come out of anywhere at any time, and anytime something related to the moment where they were damaged comes up, that's what triggering is. And I think people don't understand that triggering of a real trauma is not the same as just being told that you're not getting a car when you're 16. It's right. It's not the same as I saw a sad movie and it made me cry. It's not right. The same. It's not the same thing. But if you try to apply that same basic concept of something happened to this person and it made them feel this way, and they're continuing to experience that moment over and over, I think if you talk to people in a way that you can trigger their empathy, maybe they'll have a better understanding of it, and we'll start treating each other like people regardless of what's going on.
I think one of the things that we need to keep in mind too is that everybody that you meet is going through something.
Yeah.
Whether you can see it physically or not, you can see somebody's limp, you can see their broken arm, but there's a lot of things that you can't see.
Right.
And if something isn't directly happening to them, they're being affected because it's happening to somebody that they know or they love. I hope that maybe with, more celebrities coming out and saying things about them having mental illness or relatives having mental illness, the more that they can bring awareness to things, that maybe it's not something that's going to be such a stigma anymore. It's not something that's taboo to talk about.
Well, with every generation, things do seem to get better.
Right. I hope that in a next generation or two that, it's something that even friends will be able to say, look, I've been noticing in the last couple months you've been up and down and up and down, and have you talked to your parents or your doctor or anything? I'm hoping that it's going to be just like that.
Yeah.
That where, people are not going to be up in arms if somebody comes and says, hey, I think you have a situation, and that maybe people have the balls enough to go up and say, hey, I think you have a situation. I think if somebody would have come to me maybe 20 years ago, I probably would have been angry, but.
You think you might have heard them when they said it?
I probably not initially, but.
Right.
Being bipolar and overanalyzing everything, I probably would have taken their statement and analyzed it six ways from Sunday to where I finally would come back and say, okay, you know what? Just to prove them wrong, I'm going to go to the doctor and show them that there's nothing wrong. And then if something would have come back wrong, I would have been like, okay, well, how do you fix it? Because that's just who I am.
How do you fix it? You're the kind of person who's going to go to therapy out of spite.
Right?
I'll show you. I'll get better.
I'll be all that I can be and then some. Better in your cap, okay? How do you like them apples? Like I said, it really would have taken somebody to approach me the right way back then, because even when I was told, I kind of just, no, there's nothing wrong with me. There's something wrong with you. I don't know what you're talking about. And I got up and I left, and my mom's still sitting there going, it's just how she is. I'm sorry. She's always been like this. But it really was a lot for her to take all at once. So, but it took a while after that to just kind of, okay, well, because, I would get asked, well, has this ever happened? Did this ever happen? Did this ever happen? Well, yeah. And you could help with that? Huh. Well, okay. Well, maybe if you can help with that, then, all right, maybe I'll talk to you for a little bit to really hit that realization that, you know, okay, things don't always have to be this way and they can be better. And understanding that some of the decisions that I made during that time, some of them shouldn't have happened. They, you know, it is what it is, but all I can do is go from now and from what I've learned and try not to fall backward, try not to fall in the pits and the traps again.
Mm-hmm.
And then having friends that, you know, like I can tell, even though she said, you know, she's my best friend. So I figured, okay, if you're my best friend, I'm going to try this.
Let's see if you still love me after I tell you this.
I'm going to try this. So it actually wasn't 2 weeks ago. I told her, I need you to make sure that I get up and I go to work because I don't want to go. I was supposed to work on Monday and this was already Friday evening. And I don't want to go. I don't want to get up out of bed. Well, get up out of bed. I don't want to go shower. I don't want to. You stink. I don't care. Nobody has to smell me. I don't care. And I mean, she would text me back and forth and just some of the things that, you know, uplifting things that she would say, you know, I don't know why you're so down on yourself right now, you know, doing such a great job at work. And everybody at work seems to like you and, you know, you're such a happy person at work and I have fun with you. You make me laugh. And I mean, just nice things, compliments and things. And she's like, why don't you come over? I'm like, because I'd have to take a shower. So get your butt in a shower and come and visit. Now, do I have to come shower you? I'm getting up. You know, it's just one of those things that, you know, I tell her that I'm getting a little low. Don't let me get too low. If you see me starting to get too low, please step in. So there she was calling me 6 o'clock in the morning on Monday. Are you up? Good morning. Are you up? I'm up. Are you out of bed? Nope. Get up out of bed. I want to hear that water running in the shower. So, I mean, I might not want to say she's my best friend, but I imagine somebody like that, that's what a best friend would do.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, she was the reason I got to work a couple of weeks ago was because she called me and really aggravated the hell out of me until I got up out of bed actually. and I went to work and I'm sure I was better for getting up and going to work because I actually did not go back to bed until that night when I had to. So so there was no more laying around and moping and things like that.
Well,
so,
some days that's enough. I mean, just the idea of the cloud that's in me for whatever reason is not going away today. And so mm-hmm. I'm just going to get up and it's going to follow me like a ghost. It's just going to be there all day, coloring the sky gray, coloring my conversations with suspicion. Yeah. It's just going to be there all day. And we're just going to go together, me and my depression.
Mm-hmm. And then there are some times like, you know, that morning I get up and I go to work. And to be able to still socialize it, to force yourself to socialize enough so that you don't stay depressed. I mean, sometimes yeah. it's a challenge, but that's why I say I'm both an introvert and an extrovert. So ambivert.
Thank you so much for doing this with me.
Oh, not a problem. My pleasure.
All right. Good talking to you, Jody.
All right. Good talking to you too, Chris.
Oh my God, guys. How great was that? Really good conversation. Super, super interesting. Very dense, very honest. A lot going on there. You can find Jody everywhere that you can find a person on the interwebs. That's the Instagram, the Twitter, and the Facebook. That'll be in the feed below. If you want anything else, get a coffee mug from Coffee Over Suicide. You can go to randomify.com/store and you can get all your stuff there. Well, that's it for this week, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I'm really glad that you were with me on this one, and I hope you come back again next week. We're going to have some really interesting people moving forward. And until then, don't kill yourself. Have a cup of coffee.